As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake Doctor's Orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Welcome to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliott Price. Brought to you by Ye Olde Orchard Pub.
There's a lead pass in on Bo McDavid. Scores! 3-1 Canada!
Here's the 1-2 pitch from Martinez. Ball hit out into center field, going back. Marquise Grissom. He's got it! Dennis Martinez has pitched a perfect game.
There's a shot. They score! Duclair! 1-0! 23 seconds in. Canada jumps on top.
Here's the 2-1 pitch. Cordero swings. Base hit. The Expos will win. The Expos will win. Cordero with a base hit to win the ball game in the bottom of the ninth inning.
The drought is over. Drink it in, Canada. World champions. It's Elliott. Elliott for the touchdown.
And now here's your host, Elliott Price.
Hats off to our friend and contemporary Mitch Gallo. He asked the question nobody else would. Looked into Carey Price's eyes. Asked if he thought he needed some work on the blocker side.
Think I need to work on my blocker side?
Okay. Now, Carey did the staring down, and Gallo backed down. But it's really tough to say what your answer would be, you know, walk a mile in my shoes. But why was everyone laughing? I'll bet you every single one of those guys and gals had brought that exact question to another media member or brought it up on a sports show somewhere. I hear it everywhere. Teams are targeting Carey's blocker. Fair criticism. That's where they're scoring. Perhaps it's not a problem. Could be a coincidence. Fact is, something needs work. If not the blocker, then something else. Too many goals that we're not used to passing by the best in the world, who has been almost average for about a month. So everybody should stop laughing. It's not funny. I've been in that situation. Now, you heard how it played out, right?
Yeah.
So Gallo says, you think you need some work on your blocker? And he says, do you think that, and Gallo said no. But now you're surrounded by everybody, and this multi-million dollar star, best goaltender ever, is looking at you going, you think I,
yeah.
And then maybe you're not so sure, but that's what everyone's talking about, so.
Good for him.
Yeah.
You gotta ask the tough questions.
Yeah.
It's easy when everything's going well, right?
That's Freddie Uni is sitting in for Grant. Robinson is a busy man, and he will return on Monday, so you get a double dose of Freddy. And we'll see if you make it through Friday.
Or you, Elliot.
That's right. Of course, Freddy will be along with his list of questions, of which I have not seen, if that's proper sentence, when we get to today's opening face-off. Should be a fun show. We got a lot for you. Depends if we have a chance to get to everything. We'll hear from the Montreal Canadiens and what's going on with them. Is there concern? I mean, all the way around, all of a sudden, they're not scoring goals again. Man, did they mix it up today. So we'll hear from them. Also, a whole bunch on the Hall of Fame. Tim Raines, we'll hear from Rock in a joyous Rock mood in New York as they flew him there today to be with Jeff Bagwell and Yvonne Rodriguez. They're going to the Hall of Fame. We'll talk to Kyle Bukauskas about the Montreal Canadiens. As usual, Ryan Dixon joins us, Sportsnet's super writer. on this Thursday night to talk hockey and a whole bunch of stuff going on, including all the scoring that's going on all over the place. Just after 9 o'clock, we'll talk football with Daniel Kalis. Of course, the big games are Sunday, so we'll talk games tomorrow with Daniel. Let's see who took steps forward and who took steps backward, players and teams, during this National Football League season. We'll hear Elias Makos talk with Jonah Carey. That should be a lot of fun. Carey with a large hand in helping Rock get to the Hall of Fame. And if we have some time, part one of the Haley Wickenheiser interview from Andrew Walker in Toronto from the Fan 590, Canada's or the world's best ever female hockey player, retiring last week. So all that and more. Don't go away. We're going to have some fun. I'm Elliot Price. That's Freddie Iuni. And we have the opening faceoff in just a moment.
The final buzzer. Two glorious points. You leap from your couch, chest bump the mirror, and go to bed. You call that winning? Ye Olde Orchard Pub begs to differ. Get the game with the energy and excitement it deserves at your friendly neighborhood Ye Olde Orchard Pub. With over 20 beers on tap, over 40 single malts, 6 locations, and a full house of fans like yourself. There's no reason to spend another game night lonely. Now open on Salaberry and Chateauguay. Visit yeoldeorchardpub.com or find them on Facebook.
Say goodbye to buffering, stuttering, and annoying pop-ups. Say hello to Sportsnet Now, a new way to stream sports without cable TV. Matchups from the MLB, NBA, and the NHL. And more of your favorite Sportsnet programming. Plus, watch every Blue Jays game on any device in true high definition. Your sports, your way, starts now. Visit sportsnet.ca/now to start your free trial.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price. Tackling the latest headlines and the hottest topics, it's time for the opening faceoff with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
Playing the part of Grant Robinson, Freddie Iuni.
We'll start with something close to your heart, I'm sure. The Oakland Raiders have filed paperwork to move to Las Vegas. As a Raiders fan, how do you feel about this? This potential move?
Whatever.
Whatever.
We've done this.
Have you?
They moved to L.A. They won a Super Bowl in L.A. I live in Montreal.
So you're tied more to the franchise than the city, then, obviously.
Well, they've already done this. We've been through this already. The problem here is not that they're taking Oakland and they're putting it in Vegas. It's that Mark Davis is talking about rebranding.
Uh-huh.
You change the name from Raiders, then you might lose me. But now that they're on the verge of being a great team, that might not happen. But I would find that devastating. Why would you change the black and silver of an iconic franchise? They can't do that. I think that's something the league should be able to stop them from doing.
What do you think of this recent trend in the last 12 months? If the Raiders do move, if the NFL owners, three quarters of them agree
Not going
to
stop this.
So my question
is, they couldn't stop his dad from moving. He went to court to move because he thought, I can move, it's my team, and they lost.
Okay.
So they can't stop.
So my question to you is, what does it say about the NFL with all, three teams in the last 12 months moving?
Well, they're a bunch of money grubbers, that's all. This is all greed. There's no other reason. Build us a stadium where we will go. You didn't build us a stadium, we're going. That's the deal.
Does this send us a message to the fans saying it almost doesn't matter what you do?
No, you have to approve a stadium. San Diego went, you know what, to hell with you.
Yeah.
Even though they were prepared to have public money, tourist money pay for it,
yeah,
a tax on tourists, they still said no. Principle.
I've read articles. I've seen John Oliver on his HBO show did a whole segment on stadiums and sports franchises in cities. They don't economically make any sense to anyone but the owners. It's really just, it's flipping the bird to the fans. That's all these moves are. You're right. It's all about money. The Blue Jays GM Ross Atkins believes Jose Bautista will return to all-star form next year. What do you think about that statement, and how do you think Jose Bautista will be this coming year?
I think that he will be a better player at his age than the majority of players have been at his age, because he has preserved himself. I know he got hurt last year, but those were not injuries of age.
Okay.
He's kept himself in incredible condition, and I think that is going to serve him well. And then it will be very interesting. what happens next, because mutual agreement for next year means if you have a good year, then you want to go.
Right.
Because now you're a free agent and you can command a long-term contract. Bad year means they don't want you to stay.
Right.
So I don't see him being a Blue Jay next year either way, but we'll see.
So in 2015,
he'll have a decent year.
He had 40 home runs and 114 RBIs
in
2014.
Yeah, but he missed like 50 games last year. So if you prorate, he had almost
He had 22 home runs and 69 RBIs.
He got on base and he hit home runs. Yeah, but he missed like 40 games or something. So
you think he's just going to continue on?
I think he'll have a good year. You don't go on forever.
What do you think his stats will be next year? If you had to ballpark it.
I would say he'll get on base. He'll have like a .360 on base percentage. Yeah. He'll hit 30 homers or more. He'll drive in 90 runs or more, and he'll be a weakened outfielder because that's where he's losing things.
I know you like to say, look, this team that they have now isn't the team. It's not opening day. Having signed Jose Bautista,
yes.
What do you think? What pieces do the Blue Jays need to add, if anything?
Bullpen.
Yeah.
They need a bullpen, and frankly, I don't like what they have in left field. However, they have a minor league organization, and they just need somebody to come out of the minors and be able to play left field, even if it's not opening day. Somewhere along the way, they need to find another corner outfielder, because they've figured this other corner spot out. Whatever it is that Jose Bautista gives you, if he's healthy, he's not going to be terrible. He's going to be good. He's going to help protect, right? So 2 days ago, you pretty much had two guys in the middle of the lineup with no protection, and you needed somebody else that says, hey, you can't pitch around these guys. And so now with Jose Bautista, offense is all right, but I still think they need a left fielder. And they need help in the bullpen. You always need help in the bullpen.
That's true. Moving on to the Australian Open in tennis. Last night, Novak Djokovic was ousted by 117th ranked Dennis Istomin. Had you ever heard of him?
I thought that was something you took when you were all blocked up.
You have an Istomin, you feel better. Listen, this is a tournament he's owned since 2011. He's won 5 of the last 6 Australian Opens.
5 of 7.
5 of 7 now, correct? but in his last 3 majors, he's been ousted in the 3rd round of Wimbledon.
Yep.
Mind you, he got to the finals of the U.S. Open. He couldn't beat Murray in the World Tour Championships.
You know,
second round.
It's hard.
Is it a decline?
No, and I'll tell you why. It's the same thing that goes for hockey teams that win Stanley Cups. Very difficult to repeat. You go deep. You always go deep. Everybody plays around, and then they go home. You're always going 4 rounds. You're always going 5 rounds. You're always going deep. And we saw Serena do this.
Yep.
She had a slump, and she went through it. Was she in decline? All of a sudden, she wasn't winning majors. Last year, she had a tough year. She's still the best player on the planet, and she didn't win majors. It happens. He's still a great tennis player. He's still right there as the best tennis player in the world. He didn't win. That's all.
I agree.
Hard.
The one thing I see with Djokovic is his
players.
Game, at least with regards to Serena. Yeah. Serena's a very offensive-minded player. Djokovic relies a lot on his defense. And as you get up in age, we're not even talking about a half a step here. You know, it's less than that. At that level, if you rely on your defense, I mean, it's just not going to happen. And the way Isner played so fearless.
It's too early for him to be in decline, I think.
Well, Federer was able to reinvent himself. Nadal's come back.
Then it is time for Milos.
It's time for Milos. I agree.
He's at the age where it's time.
By the way, if Milos is on track to keep going to the finals, he would have had to face Djokovic in the semis.
Yeah.
So this opens a door. Mind you, you still got to get there. But but anyways, okay, so this is the same theme in terms of age.
Yeah.
The other day, I heard Colin Cowherd on his show,
well,
The Herd.
Idiot, so
fair
enough. Let's start with that.
Let's start with that. Suggest that should the Pats lose again to the Steelers this weekend, and Tom Brady not look good, that Belichick and the Pats move on from Brady. If they don't look good. His argument was the last 2 playoff games, the one they lost, and then the one they won last week, he hasn't looked good. And in this case, if they lose and he doesn't look good, that it's time to move on.
Well,
what do you think?
I think that they should move on from Tom Brady. Because I hate the Patriots, and I'd like to see him not there anymore.
I know it's kind of a ridiculous question for you, but honestly, like, is it time for
it's a take so people will talk about you. This is as much about Colin Cowherd as it is about Tom Brady. He's still the best quarterback in the National Football League, and they're going to do what? They're gonna what? So is Belichick gonna take over the quarterbacking duties? What are they doing
his
exactly?
His suggestion was that you don't know what you have in a backup quarterback until you put them in.
And, exactly. And by that, that's not something you may want to find out.
Right. By that, I mean you only know what you know with regards to what a backup can do. So they know that Garoppolo can do what he can do in practice. Yeah. He's had six quarters.
So Garoppolo.
Well, that was a suggestion. There's no better backup for them right now. He knows the system. He's been there for years. He can win under the system.
No. We saw the other guy, Castles, right?
Yeah.
Brady went down.
Yeah.
Castles led them to what, 11 wins?
It was 11 wins.
They missed the playoffs yep. But it was, a matter of semantics. It's about stupid National Football League, and that was just the season because some teams got in that shouldn't have, right? They're the only team to win that many games and not make the playoffs. But
that's true.
He led them to 11 wins, okay? And then he went, and then he wasn't. So
that system there, it's something with quarterbacks in that system.
That's the Patriots.
So you would keep Brady, even if he looked terrible on Sunday, you'd keep him.
He's not going to look terrible on Sunday. He didn't look terrible last week.
He's playing great defenses, I know. And finally here, just a quick question.
Although I'd like to see him lose.
Of course you would.
And then I'd like to see the Steelers lose.
If you had the power, you'd go back in time, and there'd be no such thing as Tuck Rule.
Well, the Raiders would already have won this year's Super Bowl.
And they wouldn't be moving to Vegas.
That's right.
Because
I don't really care.
You put your coach's hat on with the Habs. What are you doing? What kind of changes would you make? What kind of minor moves even? How do you light a fire on this team to get going?
I wouldn't worry about it.
It's one of those things. It's a long season, and we're in a bit of a dry spell.
The All-Star game can't come soon enough. The All-Star break can't come soon enough for this team. They are who they are. Eventually, you'll put them back together again. Hey, look, if your all-world goaltender is going to be average and you're not going to help him out, you're helping him not be average right now, then you're not going anywhere. So I think that whatever it is that they have right now, they'll keep moving guys around, and they will eventually be who they are, and they'll be as good as they can be. I don't know that that's good enough. I don't know. The Canadians right now, they're not better than Washington.
Right.
Playing at their best, when they're not playing at their best. Healthy and playing at their best. They're not better than Washington. Yep. They're not better than Pittsburgh. They're probably not better than Minnesota. I mean, it will be very difficult for them to get where they want with what they have. So there's nothing as a coach I can do to get them to the promised land unless the general manager brings me.
And last week we talked about a top four defenseman and what, a top a center, a top six winger, a top six center.
Yeah,
I agree. And what do you think about Galchenyuk's demotion? I don't think it's a demotion.
It's a whatever. It's a tomorrow night, and you know what? With Therrien, by the puck drop of the second period, he could have mishmashed his lines. It doesn't mean anything. It's game 40-something of 82, and it's the process, and it's when they get there. If they were dropping the puck tomorrow in game one of the Stanley Cup playoffs, Alex Galchenyuk will not be playing on that line, or else something bad has happened, and you're in a whole lot of trouble. Or something great has happened, because now he's a third-line center, and they have two centers better than him. So,
if only, right?
If only. Is that it?
That's it.
That's it.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
You know, I won two world championships in New York. Played in Chicago for 5 years. Played with Baltimore for a week. And I played in Miami, but my career started in Montreal. I spent 13 years there, and it's only fitting that I go in as an expo. This is my 10th year, my last year of eligibility, and the writers finally got it right. It was very emotional yesterday. You know, I was at home with my kids. I have twin daughters that are 6 years old, and my wife. And you know, it's probably the first time I think anyone has seen me that kind of emotional. I'm very proud to be up here with these two guys. I mean, I remember when I played against my guy to the right here. I used to go to first base, and I'm one of the guys that like to always talk to first basemen, you know, kind of get him going, and he's one of the few guys that never said a word. And this is the first time I ever heard his voice today. So, but it's all good.
One and only Tim Raines. So funny to hear him say, well, they finally got it right, you know, because he was the best leadoff hitter the National League ever saw, and the only better leadoff hitter was over in the other league when he was playing there, and Ricky always talked about Ricky. He was Mr. Call Myself Ricky, you know, always talked about himself in the third person. All right, you ask me, what would I do for changes if I was the Montreal Canadiens coach? Well, the Montreal Canadiens coach said they needed changes.
Well, you know what? You know, I don't like the way we play. You know, I don't like the fact that we don't generate much offensively. You know, so we have to make adjustment. Well, you know what? We try to make adjustment yesterday. Obviously, it didn't work like that we were expecting with the new pairing with our two bottom pairing defensemen. But we can't forget we got success in the past when those guys played together as a team, and we're hoping better result yesterday. We didn't get the result, so I'm going to go back where we were.
Trying to balance out our pairings right now. Things aren't working as we want them to, so wherever I'm playing, I know what I need to do, so I don't consider it an up or down. I just go out and play my game wherever I'm playing.
Nathan Beaulieu, because one of the changes was he's back with Petrie. So that's what Coach was talking about as far as the defensive pairings. And up front, Alex Galchenyuk has new line mates. He'll play with Sven Andrighetto, and he'll tell you about his line mates.
We've got to find a way to score. Obviously, it's you know, we only scored two goals in the last two games. One goal in the last two games. That's not good enough. We all know that. It's not something that you know, you can't overlook. So we got to find a way to produce, you know, generate chances and you know, be more creative and find a way to win.
We're not generating right now, so we go through stints like that through the year. I mean, there's no panic in our game. Not scoring goals is frustrating, but we did it early on, so we know we're capable of doing it. So it just means that we need to be better defensively if things aren't going in the net for us right now. So there's no panic or anything in our game right now.
Interesting conversation yesterday. Thought we'd bring it to you now. John Morosi from MLB.com on with Dean Blundell on the morning show in Toronto. And the gist of the conversation is, why is someone a Hall of Famer now when he was 20% Hall of Famer 10 years ago? So, and guys, well, have a listen.
I want to start with a Hall of Fame, Bagwell, Rodriguez, and Raines in, and Murray Chass, who I know you're familiar with, was on this station the other day, and I didn't agree with a lot of the stuff that he said. I didn't espouse his views on, you know, guys that have back knee, probably on roids, so not voting for guys with back acne. But I did kind of appreciate something he said in regards to Tim Raines. And one of the things that he said, and I thought it was really interesting, is, listen, I didn't vote for him 10 years ago, and he didn't get in 10 years ago. There's nothing that he can do to change our minds in the next 10 years when he's not playing that he's a Hall of Famer or not. If you wasn't then, he shouldn't be now. I wanted your thoughts on that, on that 10-year expiry, providing you could stay above a certain percentage, and what changes, and if you weren't a Hall of Famer then, why should he be a Hall of Famer now?
Well, Dean, it's a great question, and what I would tell you is this. It's my belief that as a voter, you owe it to the Hall of Fame, to Major League Baseball, to the fans of the game, to that that visit Cooperstown, and most importantly, the players that are on your ballot, to give them your full consideration every year. Because certainly we have new data, new methods by which we can evaluate players. When you think about advanced analytics and other forms of contextual numbers that sort of do a very good job of putting a player's career in better historical context. We have more tools now, I think, to evaluate players in their careers. So I think with the advent of analytics, Raines' career has become more impressive. So I disagree with Murray on that point. Again, I respect his work. He's in the Hall of Fame himself. But it's my belief that you have to go into it every year with an open mind. And whether it's considering players from the steroid era, whether it's considering someone who might have been overlooked in the past, and even this year, I'll tell you, I switched a couple spots on my ballot. I had, for last year's ballot, I voted for Larry Walker and not Trevor Hoffman. This time, I voted for Hoffman and not Walker. I gave it some more thought and believed that was the right way to go under the circumstances, in part because Hoffman was closer to being elected and I wanted my vote to make a bigger difference. But in general, guys, I'll tell you, I think it's just very important to consider each player with a fresh mind every year.
Interesting. There you go. John Morosi talking about the process of filling out your Hall of Fame ballot. All right. Last night, how long is this going to go on for? Well, Russell Westbrook and his, ever since KD left, there's been, underlying theme. And KD didn't handle the business last night. It was Zaza Pachulia who ran Westbrook over.
From your vantage point, what happened on the flagrant with Pachulia at the end of the first half?
I don't know. He hit me on the heart, but sorry, I'm going to get his ass back. Straight up.
Did you notice him standing over the top of you?
No, I didn't see that just now, but I don't play that game. I'm going to get his ass back. So whenever that is, I don't know when it's going to be, but I don't play that game.
Are you and KD on speaking terms?
Nah.
You guys had a little exchange in the third quarter.
What exchange?
You and KD said something to each other.
You got Macy closer to the game. You may didn't see clearly.
It's going to go on. And it's okay for revenge, but it's not okay when you say it and then it happens, because then it's, then they go, well, that's exactly what you were planning. So we'll see what happens with Westbrook and Pachulia. Meanwhile, Milos Raonic, first of all, Jeannie Bouchard dropped her first set, 6-4. We'll keep you up to date on that. Raonic already winning his second round match. And if you didn't have an opportunity to see it, kind of a different Raonic on the court. Quiet for a while, and then he spent the rest of the match yelling at himself. And he talks about that.
In general, over the last probably 3-4 tournaments, I've tried always to be a bit more positive and vocal with myself. I didn't know how much of that I had in me, so I think I played at a much more monotone level to start. So I tried to get the best out of myself by pushing, because I was falling a little bit behind. He was having a bit more looks on my serve. Then I played that great game at 4-5 that he played phenomenal to hold on to, or 4-all, I can't remember exactly. Yeah, but I just try to do these little things to get a better level of tennis out of myself.
There you go, Milos Raonic yelling it up at the Aussie, and Djokovic no longer in his way. So we'll see how that goes. There's your voices for tonight. This is Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Elliot Price. Got an update coming up. We'll see what's going on. Freddie will get you up to date. And then we'll talk to Kyle Bukauskas from Sportsnet. He's the ringside reporter for the Habs. What does he see? Does he see weakness on the blocker's eye? We'll talk to him coming up.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Kyle Bukauskas from Sportsnet, how are you?
Good, buddy. How are you?
I'm all right. What is this a night off? I mean, they don't have you doing something else. Is it a real night off?
Well, it's tough. The night always before the games, you want to get work done. You're trying to get ahead of the game and get prepared for the game the next night. So we're just finishing up a team dinner here at the local mall across the way in Jersey City, and then we'll be back to the hotel room to get some work done. So right. So I will answer that as a yes and no.
All right. You're welcome. You're welcome for us interrupting whatever it is that you're supposed to be doing.
You guys aren't interrupting anything.
So last night it was very interesting after the game, and we talked about it earlier. And Carey Price was, you know, not confronted, but someone suggested to him, you know, do you think that maybe you should, you might want to work on your blocker side? And he went, do you do a work on my blocker side? And everybody laughed. And I said, you know, the fact of the matter is, everyone's talking about it. Whether it is or it isn't, that's what everyone's talking about. Teams are targeting Carey Price's blocker side, and they're scoring goals there, so I don't know if it's a problem or not, but what do you see?
Well, first thing that came to mind for me, like you'd have to go and do some real
yeah.
significant research before to find some answers. Like, because I would love to see, like, take a survey of all, you know, all the goalies that play the majority of the games in the NHL and where the majority of the goals are scored on them. Because I know, I mean, this doesn't carry any real value there in the grand scheme of things, but I know, like, growing up playing hockey, it was always like, you want to go low blocker on the goalie. You want to go low blocker on the goalie. It was just a tougher location for them to get a piece of their equipment on it, be it for most goalies, their right pad or their blocker to make the save. That's just where you were shot, and for whatever reason, you seemed like that was where you had the highest percentage to score when you had the opportunity. But I don't know. Maybe he's the way he answered that question, he may be thinking that too. And it's just a subject that he really doesn't want to discuss with the media at this point, and that's fine. Like, I mean, I don't believe he's a guy that gets caught up too much in the numbers, and he's a guy that's solely, you know, focused on the wins and losses and what's going on with the team in front of him. But, you know, certainly with the way things have gone over the last little while, and now he's had to face these kinds of questions of, oh, Carey, do you feel, you know, or what's kind of going on lately, why maybe the numbers aren't where we've become so accustomed to seeing with him when he plays in a Montreal uniform for the last number of years here, and you could see why you could get a little bit frustrated in that case. But it's tough because you look at the goals, and the one in Detroit, you know, he had his eyes taken away completely. It goes off the body, and there was some other cases last night as well, where, you know, it's tough to pin it on him as far as who's to be at fault for those goals that were going in against Montreal. And so I guess going forward, it'll be something I think to keep an eye on, because if that's what teams are finding on video, and if that's what they're keying in on, and all of a sudden, you know, the numbers continue to inflate a little bit more, and maybe now that something like that is out there, and we've seen the way he's reacted to a question like that being put forth to him, maybe it's something that people keep an eye on more so, and then maybe we'll get a better sense later. But it's tough to tell right now, because I think I'm sure if you'd ask a lot of guys, they would think that a low blocker on any goalie is usually a good place to shoot as far as trying to have a decent shot at scoring goals.
All right. At practice today, Petry and Beaulieu back together, and really they deserve each other. They have played great, and they have played awful. And so there they are. They're going to have to figure it out together.
Yeah, I think that's the case. I mean, we saw a bit of a rough patch here over the last couple of games for them. They were split up against the Red Wings there on Monday, relatively early on. I think it was late in the first period where the switch was made, and it went on from there, and there was some, it basically stayed that way throughout Wednesday's game as well. And, you know, these are two guys where Jeff Petry has had, you know, made some really significant strides into being one of the better defensemen that this team has, and Nathan Beaulieu, as though at times he's admitted he's played the best hockey of his professional career. You know, Michel Therrien has always been a guy to be cautious towards the expectations around him and just the words that are being spoken about him as he's trying to establish himself as an NHLer, and that he's still a young defenseman and there's still a lot to learn, and you're still seeing areas throughout the game where, you know, maybe he's trying to do a little too much, or there's a giveaway that perhaps could have been avoided if the simpler play was taken, and that's part of growing and part of becoming an everyday NHLer and doing it for 20, 22 minutes a night against, you know, the better players on the planet for that fact. So I think these are two guys that, yeah, because when they're really going, Elliot, I think they are a really effective unit together, and this is just part of the going through the grind of the season, and then for a younger defenseman like Beaulieu to get used to that and playing these kinds of minutes and being put in these kind of situations. You know, there's going to be situations where things aren't going the way that the coaching staff expects, and there's going to be some rough patches. And I think the fact that, you know, that they're, looks like they're going back to him here for now and letting them figure it out together, I think that's a little bit better as far as overall chemistry goes down the road than continually trying to mix things up and try to find options, because that can be very difficult for players as well. You're getting used to playing with different teammates every night and trying to get into a rhythm. Well, it's very tough to do when you're looking at a different sweater across the way every other night on the ice.
Kyle, Freddie here. You're around the guys a lot. The season is a grind. What's the prevailing attitude or feeling in that dressing room?
You know what? I think they all realize that, you know, where they stand right now in the Atlantic Division, and the fact that, you know, although that there have been some games, particularly lately, where they haven't looked their best, they're still in a pretty good spot in the grand scheme of things. You know, I will say that this doesn't seem like a team at all that when, you know, maybe there's a couple losses in a row like they've had here Monday and now Wednesday, like there isn't that sense of panic. There isn't that sense of, you know, what's going on here and why are we not getting the results like we were earlier in the season, where we felt like, you know, on the outside perhaps they were looked as a team that was unbeatable. I think that they've done a really good job in kind of hampering the hyperboles, be it positive or negative, that can often be thrown around when they get on runs, be it winning streaks or losing streaks, and then you see games from guys like Alexander Radulov where he takes the game over, or guys like, you know, Shea Weber when he's doing his thing on the point, being on the power play or in his own zone and taking care of business in that regard. They just seem like they're just kind of going along here right now. They know that it's going to be a very long season, and they know they've got a long, long ways to go before the games really start to get tight, and they really want to start playing the type of hockey that, of course, they all intend to play, and that being the postseason. And they know that they weren't there a year ago, and it's going to take some time, and it's by no means is it locked up yet for them to be there this time around. I think they're cautiously optimistic. There's still a confident hockey group, don't get me wrong. They completely believe in each other's abilities, and I don't think that's lost on the players at all, even though that, again, you know, there haven't been, this was kind of one of the, after that game on Wednesday, this was the first one in a while. We could tell, you know, Michel Therrien was visibly upset at the way his team playing. I think you have to go back to that game in Tampa where they had that 3-1 lead and they let it slip away in the third period and ultimately lost in overtime. So, you know, they're a team that's going along here, but I think, you know, you're still hearing the things that a team that's playing with confidence and the believe in each other, you're hearing those type of things being said in the room when the microphones are in their face and the cameras are on and such. So, you know, the mood is still confident and going forward here, it'll be something to keep an eye on for sure as they try to rectify these issues that have resulted in a couple of sluggish losses here against the Red Wings and Penguins.
With Campbell Rivers, Kyle Bukauskas, ringside host for the Canadiens on Sportsnet. You talk about, you know, before the games that matter, but in a measuring stick kind of situation, Washington, Pittsburgh, Minnesota. I know the Canadians were not at full lineup playing those teams, but right now, at least in the East, with Washington and Pittsburgh, those teams look better than the Canadians.
And I would agree 100%, Elliot. And that was the other thing I left, you know, Michel Therrien said that they didn't compete last night, that the effort wasn't there. And I just wondered the way that Pittsburgh was playing and the speed and the pace that they were at, and the fact that it seemed like any time a Habs player had the puck, they had a snap of a finger to make a decision, or else someone was on them and someone was going to take the puck away from them. And I wondered if they were playing at their best hockey, like, you know, would it have been 4-1? No, probably not. But would they have managed to pick up a victory that night? Because I thought that was just a clinical performance by the Penguins, a team that knows how to win, a team that's been there before, and that's what a Stanley Cup champion looks like. And I think, you know, in the case of the Canadians, there's still, of course, some injury issues that they're still dealing with. But it's tough when you look at down the middle, and they got guys like Sidney Crosby and Evgeny Malkin, and God love a guy like Philippe Deneau. He's had a terrific year, and he's doing some terrific things despite some very trying circumstances and being put into some very big situations that no one envisioned him being in at the outside of the season. I think he's done a very good job in spite of that. But at the same time, you know, a guy like Malkin, it looks like he was able to gallop around the offensive zone at will last night. Like, it seems like they don't quite have the right bodies in place right now to compete with those types of teams that have game changers, that can take over games and do it on a consistent basis and do it when the lights are the brightest and when the games matter the most. And you can see certainly why the Penguins tore through their Eastern Conference last year once they got into the playoffs and ultimately dismantled the San Jose Sharks in the Stanley Cup final, right? Like, there's still some still a ways to go for Montreal here, I think, but absolutely, I would agree with you 100%, Elliot. If you're looking at the top dogs in the Eastern Conference, it's the Washington Capitals that have found their stride after a bit of a slow start this season, and the Pittsburgh Penguins, who really haven't looked like any team with any sort of Stanley Cup hangover here through just over halfway through the season here now.
Kyle, in order to hang with these top dogs that you were talking about, what does Montreal need to do? What are they missing in order to compete with these teams?
It's easy. Like, I mean, we can all kind of sit around and share our opinions and debate till the sun rises about where this team needs to go. And I just, again, you look at down the middle, that's such an important part on the ice. And you look at face-offs, that they don't have a real stellar face-off guy that can go in and hang with the better face-off men in the league. And you just, it helps when you have size down the middle too, and guys that can skate, and they certainly have the talent in Alex Galchenyuk, and they have a hard-working penalty killer in Thomas Lekanitz and Torrey Mitchell. You know what you're going to get with him on the fourth line, but it can be very difficult to compete with again, guys like Malkin and Crosby and you know, the playmakers like Nick Backstrom and Evgeny Kuznetsov as well in Washington. Like, these guys are very skilled and very good at what they do, and you want to have guys that can match that. And I'm not saying that Montreal can't get to that level, but just with the way they're going right now and the way they're built, it's tough for them to compete. And when you're going to foreshadow and look at a playoff series or something like that, you know, those are very difficult teams to try to beat four times out of seven. And I think going forward, it'll be interesting. We got the trade deadline coming up and what's going to happen there and if there's going to be a move made and where that move will be. It'll be something to keep an eye on, because there are some pieces here and there are glimpses that you see from this team where they look very, very strong and are very, very entertaining to watch. But, you know, as we saw last night, if, you know, they're not ready to go from the outset, they can be exposed pretty quickly, and Pittsburgh did a very, very good job of that, because after the first 10 minutes or so of that game where it seemed a bit of back and forth and it looks like we were settling in for a pretty exciting contest, Pittsburgh just took over and we really didn't see much of a response from Montreal throughout the rest of the night.
Kyle Bukauskas, great talking with you. Thanks for taking time out from your really busy schedule, and we'll be watching tomorrow night.
All right. Sounds good, guys. Always a pleasure.
Why is he laughing? I mean, he's very busy.
It's a grind for the reporters, too.
I know. He is very busy. And we do appreciate the time he took.
Is this team, we talked about it earlier this year, that this team is all in for the Cup. But it doesn't sound as if they're close enough. I mean, if there are that many pieces, a top four defenseman and a top two center.
Everybody needs something. And besides, you have a general manager that's gone out and done things at the deadline. He went out and got Jeff Petrie 1 year. He went out and got Thomas Vanek 1 year. And we'll see. If you think that you have an opportunity, then you do what you have to do. So we shall see. All right, the hockey talk continues. We continue with our hockey half hour. Ryan Dixon will join us next. And an awful lot to talk about, obviously. New York Islanders with a new coach. The Boston Bruins, are they in the market for a new coach? And if they are, does their coach interest the New York Islanders? An awful lot of hockey talk to go. Ryan Dixon from Sportsnet. coming up next on Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Elliot Price.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Price, Elliot Price. He's got a thing for smoked meat and fries. Tune in to CFMD. Tune in.
You're tuned in to Sportsnet Tonight with your host, Elliot Price, right here on 1280 AM Montreal.
I've had more fun in a dentist chair.
As usual on Thursday night at this time, it's Ryan Dixon from Sportsnet, feature writer. How you doing, Ryan?
I'm doing well. How are you?
All right. National Hockey League, at a very interesting time indeed. It's tough to tell what it all means. There's games with 17 goals. There's games with 8-9 goals almost every night. Some are attributing it to the schedule with the World Cup before the season started. Teams are tired. People love goals. What's going on?
Yeah, it's hard to say because we started off with a lot of goals too, as I recall, and then basically a few weeks in, we were kind of back to regular scoring pace slash maybe even a little less. So yeah, I mean, who knows what kind of things are in the air, whether it is teams that are, playing their last game before they go on a five-day break, or, their first game back from that. Sometimes maybe it's the rust there. Who knows? I mean, what I don't think is happening is that we've seen some kind of dramatic shift in terms of how teams are playing and how the NHL game is happening. And anyone who is hopeful that we're going to see all kinds of games like the Washington-Pittsburgh game, I think you can probably expect something different. Don't get carried away with your optimism there. But for now, if you are a goal fan, just enjoy it. This has been a pretty crazy week with the Rangers-Dallas game, Boston-Detroit, and as I mentioned, the 8-7 zany one between Washington and Pittsburgh. So my advice is just enjoy it while it lasts, because I expect we will go back to normal rates of scoring sometime in the near future.
Boston coach Claude Julien was enjoying it while it lasted, his team scoring. But then the other team started scoring, and he was already in a precarious position. And this has been going on forever, right? I mean, if he didn't win a Stanley Cup, he'd have been fired that season. So where does Julien stand with the Boston Bruins right now?
You took the words right out of my mouth. I don't know who's been fired more times than Claude Julien. You referenced it. That 2011 spring, if they don't score an overtime goal in Game 7 to beat Montreal in the first round, the logic is both Julien and Chiarelli are gone. And, of course, subsequently, Chiarelli was let go. I mean, I guess, now that we're here again, they've missed the playoffs the past two seasons. You have to think there's more smoke there than ever. There's just, I don't think there's a stomach for missing again in Boston. Are they going to get a jolt if they let go of a good coach like Claude Julien? Maybe, but I mean, people have been observing all year. I mean, the Bruins really have been one of the unluckier teams. They have one of the worst PDOs in the league. I mean, their shooting percentage as a team, it's just not where you'd expect. Guys like Patrice Bergeron are, just on pace for half of what they usually put out, and it doesn't seem like it's because they're necessarily playing all that poorly. But cold comfort when you're in an ownership position or management position or Claude Julien saying, I mean, okay, it's great that things should turn around, but we're halfway through the season now. Things haven't got any better, and, there's certainly no guarantee that these things that should smooth out are going to smooth out in time. So they have, I think, four more games before the All-Star break. We'll see what happens then. Their last one is a Thursday night game at home against Pittsburgh. If that winds up a stretch where they've lost three or four or something, yeah, maybe this could actually finally be the time that the axe does fall on Claude Julien.
With Sportsnet writer Ryan Dixon joining us to talk some hockey on this Thursday night in our hockey half hour.
The Montreal Canadiens obviously went through a spat of some significant injuries and managed to pile up a few victories through it. Interesting, though, that the teams that beat them are amongst the best in the National Hockey League. The most recent, Pittsburgh Penguins. They lost to Washington. They lost to Minnesota. Who is the best team in the NHL?
I don't think it's Minnesota. I respect the record and think there's some good things going on, but I'm not ready to jump board with Minnesota yet. I'm tempted to say Washington. I mean, they were so good last year, and they just didn't seem to know what to do with Pittsburgh's crazy speed last year. Maybe that's a problem again this year. I mean, there aren't. It's not like there were sweeping changes there on the defense core or anything like that. But I also think, you know, where last year Pittsburgh sort of out of the blue ended up getting pretty good slash quite good goaltending from Matt Murray. I mean, maybe this is the time where even if Pittsburgh holds a bit of an advantage because of how quick it is, maybe Braden Holtby makes up the difference this time. I mean, I think, again, I don't love the Caps decor, but I sure like that team. The forwards are great. I mean, Montreal fans are familiar with Lars Eller. The third line tweak there with a little more speed. I think, you know, you feel like a sucker because one of these years you think Washington's going to break through, and it hasn't happened yet so far. But hey, I mean, San Jose couldn't get to the final to save its life for 5, 6, 7 years. They finally made it at least to the final last year. It's just hard to believe that, you know, especially this current iteration of the Caps team under Barry Trotz. I mean, they had the Rangers up 3-1 that first year that Trotz was there. And then last year it was just, you know, they dominated the league and then just ran into a kind of a surprise buzzsaw. I mean, I don't really think a lot of people saw Pittsburgh coming like that. So I just feel like the Caps, their number's going to get pulled one of these years. So I'll stand by. Maybe foolishly back the Capitals for another year.
So if Washington and Pittsburgh are at the top of this conversation, we're where we were last year again. Well, Chicago and St. Louis meet early in the playoffs, and one of them wasn't going deep no matter what, since they had to face each other. Not only that, but they also had that series to contend with, to beat up on each other, and then have to face more hockey after that, after facing one of the best teams. It's possible Washington and Pittsburgh meet too early in the playoffs. Has the NHL done themselves a disservice with the current playoff structure? And not only that, you don't even play in your own division during the season, I think.
Yeah, I don't love it. I've never liked it from day one. I mean, I will admit it's been a little better. Like when they first introduced it, I kind of had visions of, you know, the old days where Montreal's playing Buffalo every single year. Boston's playing Hartford over and over. But of course, there's so much more turnover now with playoff teams that at least you do get a bit of variety. But I would be a fan of going back to the old 1-8. I understand, you've got to rejig some things, but I don't really know what the impetus was to get away. I mean, there are imbalanced conferences right now, and, you know, that is an ongoing issue for the league, but I still think a format where anything that allows your two best teams in a conference to meet in the conference final when you want them, when you want their eyeballs, as it's coming down to the wire, that's what you want. So yeah, I've never been a huge fan of the current playoff format, and I think it'll be interesting to see if there is a tweak. But I mean, as far as I know, there's no real chatter of that.
And finally, here in Montreal, a lot of conversation about the time that Carey Price is going through. More goals than we're used to seeing him give up, beaten on some shots that we're not used to see go by him. Question last night as to whether he thinks he needs some work on his blockers. I stared the reporter down and said, do you think I need more work on my blocker side? To which the response was no, but the thought was yes. So should Montreal Canadian fans be concerned here?
You know, I think Carey Price has such a body of work that, honestly and truly, you don't get concerned until the playoffs come around. I mean, even if he is a completely average, I guess by the numbers, even less than average goalie right now, throughout the rest of the regular season within reason. I mean, things can't completely fall apart for them, but I mean, he's just the last guy you're going to hit the panic button on. So we'll see. Obviously he was at the World Cup. That was his first action since the knee injury that knocked him out all of last year. I mean, who knows what kind of lingering effects there are from that. But my suspicion is it's just, you know, some little wrinkle has worked its way into his game, and it's going to take a little extra practice, and it's going to take, a few weeks of just getting back into a better headspace and building the confidence the other way. But I just have a hard time believing this is something that's going to last for a long, long time. And if I was a Canadiens fan, I would still put Price at the bottom of the list of things I'll be concerned about long term.
Sportsnet's Ryan Dixon completes our hockey half hour every Thursday at this time. Talk to you next week, Ryan.
Okay, sounds good.
So there you go, Ryan Dixon. Always good to talk to Ryan. So we are all caught up in the National Hockey League. We got football, some baseball, maybe a little more hockey. I should get at least part one in of the interview that Andrew Walker did in Toronto with Haley Wickenheiser as she retires from hockey as the greatest female player ever. But still to go, Elias Makos from Sportsnet Central. If you didn't get an opportunity to watch the show tonight at 6:30, it's on every Thursday at 6:30 on City. The panel is on, and it's again tomorrow night at 11 o'clock. But great interview that Elias did with Jonah Carey, elated, obviously, with the election of Tim Raines into Baseball's Hall of Fame. So we'll have that after we talk to DK, Daniel Kalis about the National Football League, which comes after Freddie lets you know what's going on in the world of sports and how Jeannie's doing in Oz.
Send us all your money. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher, and we'll send you a free subscription for Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Absolutely free.
Go, gotta go to the pub, ye old orchard pub. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub, ye old orchard pub. If you haven't been there, you probably should. Yeah, the beer is cold and the food is good. I think of all my friends in the neighborhood. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub, ye old orchard pub.
Now open on Salaberry and Chateauguay.
Gotta go.
You want your money to grow. You want it to be there when the time comes. Let me tell you about Paramount Financial Services and Lauren Rubin at 514-905-0885. He's taken care of my money for years, and I can worry about other things. Does your financial advisor move your money around constantly to make sure he's making money, whether you do or not? Let's not forget, it's your money. And Paramount Financial Services will take care of what's most important, and that's you. Call them at 514-905-0885. It's your money. Grow it for a better future. Paramount Financial Services.
Say goodbye to buffering, stuttering, and annoying pop-ups. Say hello to Sportsnet Now, a new way to stream sports without cable TV. Matchups from the MLB, NBA, and the NHL. And more of your favorite Sportsnet programming. Plus, watch every Blue Jays game on any device in true high definition. Your sports, your way, starts now. Visit sportsnet.ca/now to start your free trial.
Another great year at Windmill Heights Golf Club. More work done as the course gets better and better. And more improvements on the way for 2017. Family owned with an ear to their members. You have a suggestion, they'll listen, but chances are they already know. They play their own course. Golf too expensive? Not this year. Call Windmill Heights Golf Club and we'll make it work. I love the ease of travel, the food, and the fact that they won't ask me for more money when the season's over. Great food, great golf,
great price, great members. Call Lino Carboni, 514-453-7177, extension 3. 514-453-7177, extension 3. They're creating something special at Windmill Heights Golf Club.
You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price and Grant Robinson.
All right, time to talk some football, but not good, Jeannie. Come on. 4-4 in the third set, so she's been broken in game 8, and the break she enjoyed through almost all of this third set is now gone, and so a little trouble serving right now. So Vandeweghe and Bouchard tied set 3, 4-4. Meanwhile, the National Football League with the big games coming up on Sunday. Mostly we'll talk about that tomorrow night. A lot to talk about besides that as we welcome our National Football League correspondent for the entire season, Daniel Kalis. How you doing, Dan?
I'm doing all right, guys.
Obviously, a lot of talk this week about the Steelers and the video, and it seems like... That Ben Roethlisberger is like yelling at both teams, and you wonder how this will affect Pittsburgh. This shouldn't affect you in a championship game in any way whatsoever, and yet is it over now? Is it behind them?
I think it is. I think a lot of this stuff is blown out of proportion. You know, the 24/7 media nonstop. Yeah, sometimes it could be a thing. I think it's similar to the Giants boat thing. I think that stuff's handled in-house. I think they deal with it, and I think they move on with it. These guys are professionals. Yeah, you don't want that stuff to get out. It was ridiculous that he did it. I'm not saying I'm a fan of it, but I think at the end of the day, there was nothing really malicious being done, and they have a game to play, and it's one game till the Super Bowl, and I don't think they're going to let this get in the way.
All right, let's talk winners and losers for the National Football League this year. Obviously, you would have to see Arizona as the biggest loser because you saw them as the number one team in the National Football League this year. That didn't happen. What did happen?
Oh, I most definitely, I'm gonna go down with them as they're definitely one of the biggest losers, if not the biggest loser. They were Super Bowl, favorite all over the place, as my number one team as well. And they were just no good. It was their offense, which has been great the last couple of years. Their defense was fantastic. It held up, but they just didn't make the plays on offense. And that's weird because their running back was unbelievable this year. Had they won more games, he'd be in the MVP discussion. He put up some great numbers. So I think it's possible that they can make that turnaround, you know, next year to be back contenders. But they really fell flat on their face.
All right, Philadelphia felt so good in their start. Their rookie quarterback, they were calling the state Wensylvania, and it just didn't happen for the Eagles in the second half of the season.
No, it didn't happen. And look, he got out to the start, and one of the wins was against Cleveland, if I'm not mistaken. One of the wins was against Chicago, so there were a couple of easy games, and Wentz was looking good, and they were loving it. Eagles fans are known a little bit to jump the gun and get ahead of themselves, but the truth is that, they have no real receivers. Jordan Matthews is a good receiver. I like him as a number two, but he's not a number one. They have no number three, and they've got no running game. So, it's very hard on a rookie quarterback when he's got a lack of weapons. Obviously, I think they're going to, work on that in the offseason, try to get some guys in there to help them out. And I think they should see a growth in them next year. They've got a solid O-line. Their defense was good. But they just need to get up some weapons. It's hard to do anything when you have no one to play with.
Where do the Chicago Bears go? 3-13. Certainly, they'll get themselves a decent draft choice, but this is embarrassing.
It is. I think the first place they go is they cut ties with Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler, he's got all the talent. He reminds me of a Jeff George. He could throw the ball the length of the field, and that's all he wants to do. I just don't see him as a guy who you're going to win playoff games and championships with. So I think that's the first thing, and they figure out where they go from a quarterback. Their defense, had some good games, but they just had so many injuries. So if they could stay healthy on defense, I think they were okay. But, they got to decide what they want to do with quarterback. They got to decide what they're going to do with Alshon Jeffery, who's a free agent who, when he plays, he's one of the better receivers, but he's had a problem staying on the field. So those are two big keys to what they're going to do. They got the young rookie Jordan Howard, who was unbelievable in the second half of the year. So they got a running back, but it all starts at the quarterback position. So they're going to have to figure out where they go there. Is it Tony Romo? I've heard his name mentioned. He's going to be one guy talked about, but they definitely got to do something to QB.
DK, Freddie here. What about in terms of a coach as a loser? Obviously, Chip Kelly would fit that bill, fired twice.
Rex Ryan.
Where do these coaches go? What's their future here?
Well, the Chip Kelly, there was the talk that, you know, he'd interviewed with Jacksonville for a head coaching job and then an OC job. I actually think that that would be the best thing for him if he was able to work in a situation. I'm not sure that I never was really sure if his ego would take doing that. So, if he's dead serious about not wanting to go back to college, which he keeps being adamant about, I think it would be good for him to do that. You know, he came right into it being a head coach. These guys normally coach for many years as an assistant, coordinator in the league, and they learn how to run an offense in the NFL. It's a lot different than college. So I think for him, that's the guy that, I don't know, the Ryan brothers, Rex is not going to get a head coaching job for a long time, if ever again. He'll probably have to take a coordinator's job. I think he'll be back on TV. And Rob supposedly interviewed for the Redskins job, so as a Giants fan, I would love that, but I can't understand why anyone would give this guy a job.
What about your New York Giants? Obviously, this was a step forward for them at 11-5. Is that smoke and mirrors, or are they coming, or are they going? What's going on there?
Look, I think the defense is real. Obviously, they have a couple big free agents, the biggest one being JPP, and they've got to bring him back. He'll be healthy enough. He would have been healthy enough to play last weekend, but they got to bring him back, and I think the defense is good. But if they don't shore up that O-line, we're going to be having the same conversation of they'll probably have a good season, but they're not going to be able to go far in the playoffs, because if you don't have a good O-line, you saw it with Seattle, you see how much Alex Mack coming to the Falcons O-line has helped them, and look at what that's done to their offense. They always say it's in the trenches, the O-line and the D-line. They got a good D-line, they got to work on the O-line. So I'd like to see them pick up a guy, either one of the veterans in a trade, or sign one of the veterans, and they've got two or three more years of Eli, so let's not waste it.
What does the San Francisco 49ers have to do?
Everything.
Okay, good.
they're getting a new coach, a new GM. It seems like it's going to be Kyle Shanahan, but who knows if Colin Kaepernick's back. I like Carlos Hyde, running back. He's had a couple of issues staying healthy, but I don't know what they have a receiver. Not sure what they have, the O-line. Joe Staley's one of the guys, when I was saying veteran guys, the Giants can look at. But other than that, their O-line's a bit shaky. And on defense, they've had all these guys from injuries to young guys retiring, like Bolin and Patrick Willis. So they've really got to try to shore that up. They're unforeseen. You have guys retiring in their mid to early 20s. You can't plan for that. So they really need to drastically change their entire team, and that takes time.
All right, I ask you the same question that I asked you about the Giants for Seattle. Are they coming or are they going?
Again, I think with them, the O-line is a serious issue. I mean, it's no mention that the two teams that we're talking about, O-lines, were the two cheapest teams in terms of how much they spent on an O-line. And, okay, so they don't have to be the number one, but they can't be the lowest. It's going to hurt their guys. Other than that, I think that's their biggest problem, to be honest. They need to learn how to win on the road a little bit better, but the defense, as long as Earl Thomas comes back, their defense is going to be fine. They re-signed Michael Bennett to an extension. Again, I really think it's the O-line that hurt him and cost him a couple of those games that cost them home field.
And what about some of the winners?
I think their division isn't that strong, because I don't believe in the Rams right now. We don't believe in the 49ers, and while I think the Arizona Cardinals could bounce back, they've got to prove that.
And what about some of the winners from this past year? Look, Dallas had a surprising year, but a fantastic year. They have a great quarterback, a great young running back, an offensive line, as you were discussing, that's very, very good. Yes, they lost. They didn't move on, but they certainly took steps in the right direction.
I would say that there's four teams, let's say, that I think are very big winners in terms of, obviously, none of them I think I'm going to mention are going to win the Super Bowl, but the Dallas Cowboys and the Oakland Raiders need to feel very good about where they are. The Cowboys hit what it looks like is home runs with Dak Prescott and Ezekiel Elliott. With that O-line, with Dez Bryant, that offense is going to be churning for a while. The Oakland Raiders, it was hard to see how their season ended, but they showed a lot. I mean, they were really good. They were a lot of fun to watch, and they're really young. Again, they also have a great O-line. And two other teams that I think should be very happy with how their season went are the Titans and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. They've got young quarterbacks who look great. They've got, they've obviously got to add in certain positions in certain areas, each one of them somewhere different. But they're trending in the right direction. They need to be very happy with the situation of where they are.
With Daniel Kalis, our NFL correspondent, and before we let you go, the Raiders are leaving. They're going to Vegas, and this time they're not coming back.
It's weird. I can't even explain why. With the Chargers leaving, for some reason, that really bothers me. With the Raiders, I don't know, maybe it's because they've already moved and they're back and forth, and for some reason the Raiders in Vegas just seem like it's stiff. I think it's going to work in Vegas because it's, you know, one game a week. I don't think it's hard to get the fans to come to that. And like I said to you, the other day, Giants Raiders first game there. I'll see you there.
Great talking with you, DK. We'll talk tomorrow. We'll get ready for the conference championships.
Yes, sir. It's going to be two great games. Have a good night, gentlemen.
Thank you, Dan Kalis, all season long, getting our National Football League on. All right. I promised you the interview from earlier today with Elias Makos and the elated Jonah Carey. How did he manage to stay on the ground long enough to do this interview after Rock finally got into the Hall of Fame? Great stuff from today's Sportsnet panel. You can watch it again tomorrow night, the whole show, at 11 o'clock on City. But you can hear the interview with Jonah Carey coming up next here.
As an unlicensed doctor, we suggest a prescription for one of our shows. Sign up for our free podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Fake doctor's orders. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
Elliot.
So you're an expert.
That's right, tough guy.
Hey! Who is your daddy?
Elliot.
And what does he do?
Zippo, nada.
Hey!
Elliot.
C'est moi.
Elliot.
You're an expert.
Yes.
Elliot.
Hey!
Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
You're not an expert.
Right here on 1280 AM, Montreal.
What do you mean I'm not an expert?
He's got a rocket for an arm.
Aucune idée.
Look at this.
Welcome to the show. Our panel is coming up, but first, let's go to Denver, Colorado, and join Jonah Carey, the author, works at CBS Sports and Sports Illustrated as well. And Jonah, thank you so much for joining us. I want to start off by showing a clip from Late Night with Seth Meyers from a few years ago, when I think you really started the campaign to get Tim Raines in the Hall of Fame.
Do you want to make a quick case for Tim Raines?
Tim Raines needs to be in the Hall of Fame. Now I'm angry. Tim Raines needs to be in the Hall of Fame. I will come to your house and hunt you down if you don't put him in the Hall of Fame.
Jonah, since then, it seems like the wheels have finally gotten in motion. You know, Tim Raines, his first year, he only got 24% of the vote. The second year, he went down to 22. He's finally in. How happy are you?
It was great, man. It was great for multiple reasons. I wrote about it for CBS Sports. For me personally, I think that we identify sports, and it's not necessarily about Saku Koivu or Patrick Roy or Tim Raines or the Habs or the Expos or anything like that. It's about family. It's about the formative experiences that we have. Who took us to our first game? Where did we watch our first game? So that meant a lot to me. For Expos fans, obviously, the franchise didn't have that much success, only one playoff berth. Team hasn't existed in 13 years, so it's a chance to celebrate. You know, finally, there's something to celebrate. And then, of course, for Tim Raines, you know, that's the most important thing. And, you know, not often you get a chance to meet somebody that you grew up rooting for, but it turns out that he's a lovely person. He's affable. Fun, warm, and for him and his family, it's great. So a win all around for everybody.
Jonah, this week, Tim Raines said that he feels that social media played a real important key in him getting into the Hall of Fame because people started to tweet out the numbers, you chief among those people. What are your thoughts? Why did it finally happen after so many years?
I mean, that's part of it, but the bigger thing to me, or at least the complimentary thing, is what happened to the voter roll. So for the longest time, the way that you would get a vote for the Hall of Fame, you wait 10, you get, join the BBWA, I am a member, but then you have to wait 10 years, I don't have 10 years, and then once you have that, you never lose your vote until the day that you die, pretty much. They changed it. They changed it so that if you haven't been covering baseball for 10 years or more, you are no longer eligible to vote. So all of a sudden, these voters at 60, 70, 80 years old, who aren't necessarily as attuned to the analytical side of the game, and Raines has a little bit of an analytical case, didn't have 3,000 hits, 500 home runs, actually requires a little bit of thinking. They didn't have a vote anymore, and then there are new people coming on the rolls who are 34, 35 years old. They grew up with baseball prospectus and with Rob Nyer and Bill James and all that stuff. And so they're very much educated in all of this, and they have the ability to vote for not only Reigns, but Bagwell, Mike Mussina, Edgar Martinez, players who didn't have the big round numbers but are worthy Hall of Famers if you're willing to look.
What about the pressure on BBWA, the voters, the ones that are making their ballots public, those who aren't making their ballots? I know there's changes in store for next year, but was there also pressure? You know, so many people did make their votes public this year.
Well, I would imagine there was some pressure. First of all, I was pressuring them. I was emailed. I emailed as many voters as I could who didn't vote for Reigns, but it wasn't pressure. I mean, I just sent them a bunch of stats, and I said, hey, listen, this guy's good. But yeah, sure, you know, if you go out on social media and you say, I voted for Lee Smith and nobody else, you're going to get hammered. That's how it goes. Certainly for Reigns people, you're going to get hammered, but, you know, maybe Bonds people or Bagwell people or what have you. So, yeah, I think that did factor into it a little bit, how much it's impossible to know. And also I would add that there's a final ballot issue. On average, when you look at guys who've made it to their final ballot without getting in, which is not that many because usually you either get in quickly or you drop off the ballot. It's hard to last that long but not get in. There is, on average, a 6% bump in the final year. So Reigns had 69% and change last year. You come into this year and you say, okay, all he needs is that average bump and he's going to get into the Hall of Fame. Turns out he got a bunch more than that, but that also tended to bode well. I don't know what you want to call it, a sympathy vote, a little bit of a lift all tides vote, but there was a little bit of that too.
Yeah, I mean, 86% in his 10th year, that's 86% is convincing. I want to just quickly ask you about Vladimir Guerrero. You mentioned that turnover in voters. You would think maybe it would bode well for a guy that a lot of people feel with the .318 batting average and the slugging and the on base is a first ballot guy. He didn't make it on his first ballot. Looks like he'll get in eventually. Do you think he should have got in first ballot?
Well, I don't really differentiate between first ballot or not. To me, if you're good enough, then you're good enough. The thing to me was there were more than 10 good candidates on the ballot who deserve to be in by the historical standards of the Hall of Fame. I don't think of the Hall of Fame as, well, Babe Ruth and Willie Mays are in and that's it. There are 200-odd people in the Hall of Fame. So you look at the average Hall of Famer at every position and you do it that way. And by that standard, Rod is a wonderful player. He was like the 10th or 11th or 12th best guy. You know, him, Manny Ramirez, former Expo Larry Walker. I put all those guys in roughly the same category. And so you could make a real argument that even though Vlad is a fantastic, was a terrific player, maybe just a little bit on the outside. But regardless, you know, the 71% that he got on the first ballot, of course it bodes well for the future. And look, if you're an Expos fan, you want to celebrate. It rains this summer, and you're going to get Vladdy either summer of 18 or summer of 19. There are worse fates than that.
All right, Jonah, thank you so much. That's Jonah Carey joining us from Denver, Colorado.
I love little baby ducks, old pickup trucks, slow-moving trains.
And Tim Raines.
I love little country streams, sleep without dreams, Sunday school in May, and hay. And I love you too.
You like that?
This is nice.
Wow. 5-5 in the third set, Bouchard and Vandeweghe. That ninth game went on forever, and sadly, Bouchard just couldn't grab it, and eventually Vandeweghe won it and stayed alive because Jeannie took her out at love in game 10. And so 6-4 Vandeweghe in the first set. Bouchard came back, won the second set, 6-3. And they are tied at 5-5. Vandeweghe serving game 11, up 30-15.
What do you think Jonah Carey's next mission is now that Tim Raines is in? Well, what's next?
He is too busy.
He's too busy to care.
Do you see the A-listers that he's had an opportunity to? So he's hunting down whoever he's ever wanted to talk to, and they will talk to Jonah now.
So my question to you here: yes. Which player now that Tim Raines has made it should be in the Hall of Fame that's not there now?
Onions. Oh.
Too many.
Whoever's coming up. I mean, Chipper Jones is new for next year. And I forget who else it is. Yeah. I would push Larry Walker. He's a long way. He's a long way. But we'll see. Maybe someday they'll realize just what a great player he was, and then they'll start giving you metrics on the runs that he saved defensively, and that will change how he's looked at. Because if you ask me, and I saw them play a great deal of their careers, I think Larry Walker was a better player than Vladimir Guerrero.
Overall.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Haley Wickenheiser. Nobody was better than her. Andrew Walker's interview with Haley Wickenheiser coming up. We've got an update, and we'll keep you up to date on Jeannie Bouchard. You're listening to Sportsnet Tonight in Montreal. I'm Elliot Price.
Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub, ye old orchard pub. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub, ye old orchard pub. Well, if you haven't been there, you probably should. Yeah, the beer is cold and the food is good. I think of all my friends in the neighborhood. Gotta go, gotta go, gotta go, gotta go, gotta go to the pub.
Now open on Salaberry and Chateauguay.
New to the country? Via Rail and the Institute for Canadian Citizenship partner to give a gift to each Canadian citizen during their first year of citizenship. The Cultural Access Pass provides complimentary admission to more than 1,000 of Canada's cultural treasures from coast to coast to coast. The Cultural Access Pass creates opportunities for Canada's newest citizens to discover our rich cultural history, world-renowned artworks, historical figures, and stunning parks. Go to icc-icc.ca. A message from Via Rail Canada.
Truck and Roll moves concerts, some big name bands all over North America. But Truck and Roll also serves some you've never heard of. Big and small, they take the same painstaking care. Trade shows, theater shows, concert events, experienced drivers ensuring timely delivery and professional service. Because the show must go on. And that can't happen if whatever you need to be there doesn't get there when you need it. Call Truck and Roll, 514-421-0045, on the net at truckandroll.com and on Facebook. Truck and Roll delivers on their promise and on time. There's a lot of moving parts. Call the experts to assure that your complex ground transportation logistics are handled by those who know what they're doing. Because every second counts. We cover Canada and the United States. Call Truck and Roll, 514-421-0045, on the net at truckandroll.com and on Facebook.
Now, before we do this, let's go over the ground rules. Rule number one, no touching of the
Elliot Price.
And that's it!
Ding, 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 ding.
Elliot.
Ding, ding, ding.
Price.
Tough love.
Ding, ding, ding.
This guy is a wrecking machine.
Do not tangle with me. I'm a trained expert in karate. My hands are lethal weapons.
You want a piece of me?
Oui, papa.
Let's rumble.
Sportsnet Tonight with Elliot Price.
It's go time.
Weeknights at 8 p.m. on 1280 a.m. Montreal.
It's a waste of life.
All right, time now for a Sportsnet Tonight sports update. Jeannie, hanging on. What's up, Freddie?
Jeannie Bouchard is serving to stay in the match. 6-5 right now versus American Coco Vandeve. She is up 30-15. Now tied 30-30. The winner moves on to the fourth round. Miloš Raonic punched his ticket into the third round, beating Gilles Mueller. He faces Francis Gilles Simon next. The Oakland Raiders have filed papers to move the franchise to Las Vegas. Final decision still requires approval from three-quarters of NFL owners. And should it be approved, it will be the third relocation of an NFL franchise in the last 12 months. Raptors guard DeMar DeRozan has been named starter for the 2017 NBA All-Star Game. This will be his third All-Star Game appearance and first as a starter. And Mark Trumbo has agreed to a three-year, $37.5 million deal with the Orioles. He led all of baseball with 47 home runs. And that's the Sportsnet Tonight sports update.
All right, Jeannie serving. She's at 40-30, trying to stay alive. There's a review, and it was very close, and it was out. So that's good. One more point here, and they'll go to play forever.
That's right. There's no tiebreaker at the Australian Open. The only major that has it is the U.S. Open.
So Vandeweghe 6-4 in set one. Bouchard came back, took set 2-6-3. It was 4-4. And Jeannie had a great opportunity a number of times. And just like that, I mean, she had Vandeweghe way out on the right of the court, and all she had to do was put the ball in the court, and she would have hung on and won this game here, but didn't happen there. Vandeweghe slipped, and Jeannie couldn't put it in the court, and they are once again
deuce,
with Jeannie needing to win this point to stay in the match, or it's over. All right, the interview with Kaylee Wickenheiser coming up. Don't go away. This is Sportsnet Tonight. I'm Elliot Price.
Gets underway every weeknight at exactly 8 p.m. And the old man calls it quits at around 10.
All right, we can't leave it at that. And she's done?
Son, it's
she's
over.
Done. So, Jeannie Bouchard, she was good until she lost her service in the third set. And at 4-4, she could have put it away. She would have, because she ended up winning the 10th game at Love.
Yeah, she had her chance.
Yeah, she had her chance in the 9th game. If she wins that one, she goes up 5-4 and then serves it out for 6-4. But she didn't get it done.
I do think this, while the loss is going to sting, I think this is encouraging. She played tough. She lost the first set, and she fought through it. This is something we haven't seen in the last couple of years. When things got tough with Jeannie, she sort of just fell apart. I think we're on the right track with Jeannie. I think we're going to see very good things this year from her.
So Jeannie is gone. Milos Raonic was a winner. Now we'll hear a little bit from Milos coming up before we go here. First, Haley Wickenheiser with Andrew Walker, part one.
5 times an Olympic medalist, 4 of those gold. And one of the greatest players our country has ever produced. She is Haley Wickenheiser. She joins us now on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. What a whirlwind. Thanks for being on the show. What a whirlwind week it's been for you.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't expect, I guess, the amount of outpouring. I knew there would be some response, obviously, but it's been... I'm still trying to catch up. It's I haven't slept very much in the last 3 days, so it's been amazing. But I don't know if I could have asked for a better way to end my career, to be able to do it in Edmonton with the Oilers and the Flames, and just the two teams that have had the most impact in my NHL or in my life from the NHL. So it was a pretty cool experience. Yep.
Yeah. Well, we appreciate you making time today. To be honest, like I was watching the ceremony, and you know, Wayne's in town, and it's a battle of Alberta, and for the first time in a lot of years, it's a meaningful battle of Alberta. So there's a lot of eyeballs, and I was just thinking, not that how do I put this? Not that we forgot about you, but you've been around for so long. Like the women's game really starts to get the spotlight on it, you know, way back in Nagano, and it's gone up and it's gone down, and there's been great moments, and we've seen new players, and we've seen girls retire and girls go into the Hockey Hall of Fame, and you've always been there. So I'm not really sure what a hockey world without Haley Wickenheiser forefront and center is going to look like.
Well, you know, I think the thing is I've been playing since I was 15. So people, first, they think I'm way older than I am. And second, I've been around a long time. And really, I came into the game at a time when it just started. You know, women have been playing the game for so long, but no one really cared about it or cared enough to talk about it or televise it enough. And I came in to the game when, you know, the first Olympics started in Nagano. And then from there, you know, the game exploded onto the scene, and we've seen, you know, many Olympics since, and the amount of girls playing hockey in this country is around close to 100,000 now. And so it's just the timing, I think, of it all. And I was lucky to have those opportunities. But, you know, a little girl growing up in Shawnee, Saskatchewan, you just kind of never dream you'll have the career that you do, and the experiences that I've had. But it's been amazing, and I'm really grateful for having the chance to say that I could be a female playing the game of hockey, and that I've made a living at it, and that's pretty cool.
All the medals and the championships, what I find amazing is that, I mean, America has a great hockey program, and a number of times, I mean, 05, 08, 2009, I mean, they win gold 6 times, I believe. They win gold at the World Championships. But other than 98 in Nagano, you know, you get over that hump. 02 Salt Lake City, we remember Torino. where the men's team failed and you guys were so great, and of course Vancouver, and you go to, so you guys never ever came up short or came up second at the Olympic Games. Why the difference in success? Was the Olympics just a different level for you?
Yeah, the Olympics is like the ultimate. It's the Stanley Cup of women's hockey. I think, you know, world championships are every year and they're, you know, high stakes and everyone takes them very seriously. But the Olympics is sort of everyone, that's just another level up, whether you want to admit it or not. It's just the way it is. And I think that, you know, one of the things I'm most proud of in my career is that I would say that I don't think I played a bad gold medal final in five Olympic Games. Mm. And that's probably from a pure hockey sense statistic the thing that I am really most proud of, because I think it's very hard to do that. And I think our team as well has been able, like, it's just, I'm amazed at the way that our team has been able to have so much adversity but always rise up in those gold medal games and find a way to win. And I think it just really puts a stamp on how resilient the women's program has been. The players, it's a highlight to all of the players that I've played with who know what it takes to win and kind of go somewhere deeper to figure out, and it's not something that every team has the ability to do. And I think that's why our team is sort of endeared to Canadians for so many years, because they recognize that passion and that ability to rise up and win when it matters the most.
The great Haley Wickenheiser announces retirement last week and joins us on the Andrew Walker Show this afternoon. Also looking forward to the Canadian Tire Wickfest coming to Calgary in its eighth year. We're going to ask her about that as well. What is next for you? I wonder if media or coaching is in the cards. I know Cassie Campbell Pascal has made such a wonderful transition, and there she is between the benches. Wouldn't you know it? As you know, your retirement ceremony goes in Edmonton. Is that in the future for you?
I don't know about the media side for me. I think I would definitely be more interested in the coaching side, being involved with the team, with players. I think that's, you know, where I'm best suited, I guess. I love the game and just the details and the day-to-day grind of the game, which is what I'm dearly going to miss as a player. I think I have a pretty good understanding of what it takes to play at that level and what guys go through on a daily, day-to-day basis. So it'd be something, I mean, I've had some conversations with some people in the NHL recently and different teams, and just, you know, talking about, you know, what the future might hold. So I'm just going to take some time to weigh my opportunities and see what comes. But I've also been accepted into medicine, and which is probably the biggest reason why I'm hanging my skates up right now. And so it's something I've always wanted to do since I was a kid. It was either being a doctor or being a hockey player. So I've been able to do one, and we'll see if I can do the other. And maybe I can blend that with staying in the game somehow.
The NHL thing is an interesting conversation. And I guess without revealing too much, I mean, you're 38, and that's when you talk about the coaching game and long term, that's very young. You go from, you know, old in one field to very young in the next. There are women in sport, there's maybe, you know, very few that and it's a shame really, that just get thought of as an absolute athlete first in terms of respect, and you were one of those people that, I mean, if you follow that, could, you know, have a position in the National Hockey League. I have no doubt about it. Is that a dream? Is that a goal to kind of be the first?
I don't know if it's a goal of mine, but it's certainly, like, it's something I've thought about, and it would have to be if the right opportunity came about. I know, yeah. I've you know, I was talking with Todd McClellan on the weekend a little bit about, you know, what do you want to do down the road, and I've talked to Ken Hitchcock and Bobby Clark and a lot of different players and manage people in management, and you know, we've just talked about just different opportunities that are going to come my way, and what I might want to be able to blend with it. I have no illusions of the fact that coaching is an incredibly hard job at that level, and there would be a lot of learning that would go into that. But I think just of anything in the game, the coaching, the management side of the game is the thing that I would be most interested in. And you know, being involved with the players on a day-to-day basis, I've trained and been with so many of those guys through the last probably 20 summers, or if not more, and so I have lived sort of in the NHL world a little bit, and I know it's not the illusion it's cracked up to be. It's a tough go, and I could probably add some value to someone along the way if it was the right scenario, but I guess we've got to try to figure out how to do all of this and blend it with medicine, which is something I still really want to do and pursue. And it's a lot of work ahead of me, I guess.
I'm sure you've been doing a lot of reflecting over the last little while. I have too. I think all of Canada has on your career. So let's look back at it a little bit. Like, what do you think separated you from everybody else? We all have our theories. I have my ideas, but what made you the best?
Well, when people say the best, I really truly think that, you know, you're as good as your last game was. And I think what I tried to do was to be consistent and to be the best every game if I could be. I always wanted to play my best game. So if it was, you know, mid to AAA team we were playing in St. Albert, Alberta, to, the biggest stage in the world at the Olympics, I just treated both of those things as the same. And I tried to approach the game as a true professional. I really tried to elevate myself, and I tried to be around the best players in the world. So I played in Europe, and I went to the Flyers camps, and I skated with the best NHL players in the summers, just as a way to try to elevate my game and learn. So I think the biggest thing is I just really loved the game. I gave my heart and soul to the game in every way, and I tried to make a point when I stepped on the ice that if anybody was watching, they wouldn't say, oh, that's a good girl playing hockey. They would say, that's a good hockey player. Mm-hmm. And for me, that would have been the greatest compliment I could have gotten.
I guess it's a similar question, but does that go hand in hand with your legacy? Is that what you'd want your legacy to be?
Yeah, I mean, I think when I walk into a mall or an airport and a grown man comes up to me and says, gets a little smile and says, are you Haley Wickenheiser? And yes, and I didn't really like women's hockey, but I really love watching you guys. And a lot of times people say, I love watching you guys more than the men. So, you know, we just get that compliment quite often now. And it really, I have a little bit of a bigger smile when it comes from, you know, grown men.
Yeah.
That's sort of the audience that I think was probably the most resistant to it initially. And it's come a long way. It's changed. You know, my son, when he was 5, he said to me one day, Mom, do boys play hockey too? Because all he was surrounded with was women's hockey. And, my nephew is 5 years old, and his favorite players are the players on the women's national team. So they have no contact, no difference now. And, you're a hockey player, you're a hockey player. And if you can play, you can play. And that's the way it should be.
If you're traveling in the North Country Fire, where the winds hit heavy on the borderline, remember me to one who lives there. For she once was a true love of mine.
There you go. Well, we have some time on Friday night. We'll see if we can get in part two of Andrew Walker's interview with Haley Wickenheiser, the greatest women's hockey player ever to lace him up.
I particularly loved Andrew's question with regards to, or his statement about how he doesn't see women's hockey or hockey without Haley Wickenheiser. And I echo that effect. I don't know what this game is going to look like. This is the one person that's been a constant since 98 at the very least.
All right. We'll take a very big break, a very short break, and see if we can squeeze in a little Milos Raonic from earlier today. Jeannie Bouchard, by the way, tough match. She's gone, but Milos has a path to the final. We'll hear from him coming up.
Please see for me, never has hanging.
This ain't like when you're at a game and sign up for a credit card just to get the prize and then you immediately cancel the credit card. Because there's no prize when you sign up for our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand.
All right, we told you, we're kind of keeping you up to date as it was going along. Major disappointment there, Jeannie Bouchard. She played well, she fought hard, but she ends up losing in the third set. In the second round. So she's gone, but Milos Raonic was a winner today, and with Djokovic getting knocked out, the earliest in a Grand Slam since 2008, That means that Raonic with an opportunity. Wasn't feeling well today, got it done, and faced the media.
I played well. I was efficient. I got the breaks. I faced some scares. Played well in both situations. I stepped up at the end of that third set. He stepped up as well. So I'm happy. I was able to finish out three.
What's the scoop with your laryngitis or whatever?
I got a little bit of a flu.
Milos, was the end of that third set, I mean, you were very vocal and you were really urging yourself on. Was it really an extra motivation? Not that you don't want to finish in straight sets anyways, but it just seemed like, especially if you're feeling a little bit under the weather, particularly so?
Yeah, you know, in general, over the last probably 3-4 tournaments, I've tried always to be a bit more positive and vocal with myself. I didn't know how much of that I had in me, so I think I played at a much more monotone level to start. So I tried to get the best out of myself by pushing because I was falling a little bit behind. He was having a bit more looks on my serve. Then I played that great game at 4-5 that he played phenomenal to hold on to, or 4-all, I can't remember exactly. Yeah, but yeah, I just try to do these little things to get a better level of tennis out of myself.
When did you start feeling sick, and did it affect your energy levels today, Bill?
I started feeling a little bit of a cough. I didn't think much of it 2 days ago after my match, before bed yesterday, and I was okay. I practiced normally and everything, and I thought, okay, maybe I'm on the way up from this. And then this morning I felt pretty bad waking up. Didn't warm up much and just came out with the sort of idea of put everything into the match, try to solve it and understand the importance of the mental side of things in that situation.
Do you have Simone next, 25th? What are you going to do to beat him? What do you know about his game?
I know a lot about his game. I've watched him play a lot. I've played him in quite a few important matches. He's going to be there really trying to get me to play at his speed, his rhythm. Obviously, he tries to slow things down, play low, so I won't have the opportunity to get too many swings, that many shots. But I got to serve well, and I got to be aggressive, and I got to take it to him, because the last thing I want to do is get there into this sort of game of playing long rallies with him.
So there you go, Milos Raonic. On to round three, and the toughest, highest seed that he can face before he gets to the final is an eighth seed, and he's number three. We'll see. Time for our National Hockey League fantasy update, which we do every single night. So let's see. Let's start with this final here. The Senators beat the Blue Jackets. It's hard times in Columbus. Ottawa, big win for them. Tourists from Carlson and Mathot. And my boy Zingle scores late in the second period. I gave him some breathing room. That's Wilderman and Brassard on the assists. And let's see who turned in the shutout with 42 saves. Ooh. That minor league goaltender, Condon,
wow,
beat Goalie Bob. 2-0 Ottawa.
The Islanders are winners over Dallas. 3-0 Tavares with two goals. He's up to 18 on the season. Lee and Kuhlman had assists on his goals. One was shorthanded. And DeHaan, his third, with an assist from goalie Thomas Greiss. Also with a shutout, 23 saves.
Maybe St. Louis is fading here. Washington is pounding them. It's 6-1 for the Capitals at St. Louis. So not good. Jake Allen chased after 4 goals on 10 shots. And Hutton not much better. 2 goals on 6 shots. 18 saves so far for Braden Holtby, who wasn't very good against the Penguins the other night. But he's been good tonight. Let's see. Beagle. Hey, he scored against someone other than Chicago. Burakovsky. Connolly. Johansson. Oshie. And Williams. And only Burakovsky has an assist to go with all those goals. Winnick with a couple of assists. Wilson, Ovechkin, Orlov, Kuznetsov, Eller with another assist.
Jeez.
He's rolling right now. Backstrom with an assist. Schwartz, not with you.
The Schwartz is not
That's
with you.
That's right. The only goal of the game for St. Louis from Stastny and Steen.
I like that.
What do you got?
Arizona and Minnesota tied 3-3 at the end of the second period.
By the way, they sent Duclair down today, Arizona.
Isn't that interesting?
Oh boy.
Isn't that interesting?
Yep.
3-3, Arizona and Minnesota. 4 era. For Minnesota, we have Stahl with his 16th, Niederreiter with his 13th, and Stewart with his 10th assists. Pominville with 2, Koivu with 1, Niederreiter with an assist, as well as Dumba. Responding for Arizona, we have Perlini, unassisted, Chytrin with his 3rd, from Doan and Dvorak, and McGinn from Goligoski, his 8th.
All right, 6:09 left in the third period, or the Leafs will lose. 3-2 Rangers right now. Skye from Zuccarello and Kreider. Bozak tied it up from Van Riemsdyk and Marner. Rangers went up on Bushnevich. 6th of the year from Nash and Skye. And then JT Miller made it 3-1. His 15th of the year from Clendenning and Hayes. And Zach Hyman, shorthanded, brought the Leafs to within 1, but that's where they stay right now. Hey, look, the Leafs have had everybody come back on them all year. Yeah. Maybe this is their night. Anderson, pretty good night in goal. He's allowed 3 goals, but 37 shots. And Henrik Lundqvist, 2 goals against on 23 shots, but
he's coming back.
Leafs down 3-2, and we'll let you handle your team
and,
here.
And Nashville's in Calgary tonight. At the end of the first, Nashville's up 1-0. Neal with his 15th from Fisher and Beteto. We have Saros in net for Nashville and Chad Johnson in Calgary.
So there you go. Thanks so much for everybody joined us tonight. Kyle Bukauskas from Sportsnet, of course, ringside reporter with the Habs. We talked to Ryan Dixon, as we do every Thursday night. Dan Kalis. Thanks to the people at Sportsnet Central, Elias Makos, and his interview with Jonah Carey. I got a new... we're going to finish off. We were one player short. We're playing a player short, and now we have a completion to our hockey half hour on Friday night. Rory Boylan will join us tomorrow, and I don't know how I'm going to get along with him because he refereed for 10 years, and I don't do well with authority. So we'll see.
I'm looking forward to tomorrow.
We'll see. Andrew Berkshire will also join us, and Dan Kalis, as we get ready for the National Football League's championship weekend. Rangers just scored to make it 4-2. And that's it. Thanks for joining us on the podcast at sportsnet.ca on behalf of Freddie Iuni and Grant Robinson, who's not here tonight, but will return on Monday. I'm Elliot Price. Bonsoir.